ever will be. And you know it.
With a tear in my eye.
The queen of the crop.
Acknowledge me.
What is up, everybody? It is Thursday, July 24th, episode 390 of Top Rope Nation. Ryan Drosty here with you today with a special guest co-host. Justin was not available. Jesse was not available today. We were not planning on doing a show today, but with today's breaking news about the death of Hulk Hogan, it was kind of mandatory we do a show. And, kind of been sitting around all morning thinking about it, kind of lots of thoughts running through my mind. You know, what am I going to say? There's so many different opinions out there about Hogan. I thought if I'm going to have someone fill in for Jesse and Justin, I would choose someone who's a good friend of the show, a long time fan of professional wrestling. You know him from Pro Wrestling Torch, many guest appearances here on Top Rope Nation, Frank Pettiani. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Ryan, thanks for thinking of me. It's a pleasure to be on the show. And geez, I'm becoming a regular on these memorial shows because when Scott Hall passed away, I was on that too. So I don't know. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't know. Not to make light of the situation because obviously it's a pretty sad day.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. These are some of the toughest shows to do. And so the fact that we have called on you to do those is giving major props to you, sir. So we appreciate you.
I appreciate you. And I appreciate the Top Rope Nation group.
Yeah. I mean, nobody was really expecting this. Obviously, Hogan's 71 years old. There had been reports out there that he was in pretty poor health. But, you know, his new bride had disputed that. Jimmy Hart had disputed it. I think just over 24 hours ago, Jimmy Hart was on Twitter talking about how they were hanging out doing karaoke and Hogan was really strong. But, you know, we know that Hogan had neck surgery back in May, and it was pretty grueling recovery from that. So there's been a lot of reporting. TMZ had been reporting on him struggling with his health as well. And I think TMZ's article, as far as I know, broke the story this morning. That was the one that everyone was sending me. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to talk about Hogan's career, obviously, and all of that and all of the reasons why Hogan's legacy is just really, really complicated, I think. But we're going to get into all of that. First off, you know, if you are just tuning in and you somehow didn't hear the news, basically what happened is, according to TMZ Sports, medics came to Hogan's home in Clearwater, Florida early this morning. It's actually right around, the call came in at 9:51 a.m. Eastern time, and he was treated at his home by Clearwater Fire and Rescue personnel. They were doing chest compressions on him at the scene as they were taking him out of the home. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. As I said, 71 years old. According to Clearwater Police Department, he died at 11:17 a.m. Eastern time. They said no signs of foul play or suspicious activity. He reportedly died from cardiac arrest. And, you know, obviously people are going to point to Hogan being a professional wrestler and admittedly used steroids for a very long time. And, you know, what that could have probably played a part in his role. Role in the death, you would assume. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but this, unfortunately for us as wrestling fans, has been a trend with the, you know, a lot of the stars from our youth is early deaths. Hogan, not really an early death. I mean, 71 years old, he should have lived longer than this. But certainly he lived a lifestyle for many, many years that would lead you to believe that that lifestyle played a role in his death, Frank. So when you heard the news this morning, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts was, what the hell? You know, like, first Ozzy passes away yesterday. And, you know, growing up, I mean, I'm a 70s kid, but, you know, my music formation happened in the 80s. So Ozzy is a significant part of that. Between that, Malcolm Jamal Warner a day before. You know, and I watched a lot of the Cosby Kid or the Cosby Show, I should say. So, I mean, this is like my childhood basically being ripped from me. I mean, you know, a good portion of my life, Ryan, has been watching wrestling. I mean, I've been watching since 1986. and I'm 52 years old. Well, I'm going to be 52 in September. So, I mean, that's about 80% of my life if I, you know, if I do quick math. So, you know, just really crazy. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm on the plane at that point, and I got a couple of, you know, I'm in the back, I'm not flying or anything like that. So I got plans. I'm going to do a little studying. I'm going to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling Night 4. I got this whole thing. And then shout out to my buddy Mike, who sent a text to Justin Girardi, patron of the show. And the two of us are just like, what? So I'm sitting there, I'm boom, 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 boom for the next hour. I'm getting nothing done. I'm not studying. I'm not watching anything. It's just, you know, it's crazy. I mean, this is somebody that, you know, for all intents and purposes, we grew up with. I assume everybody in the group is around, you know, Gen X, or at least on the
older millennials. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you consider, by the way?
I'm an elder millennial. I missed Gen X by just a couple of years. I'm 41. Years. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm definitely an elder geriatric millennial. Yeah.
Geriatric millennial. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I'm a bit, because I'm 1973. So I think I'm like a baby Gen X, because Gen X, I think, starts in the 60s, not to go into that discussion, but
yeah.
You know, and that kind of ties in. I'm glad you said that, because that ties into, well, I don't know, you know, well, I'll let you ask the questions. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but, you know, just stunned. I mean, there are so many memories, of watching Hulk Hogan as a kid, you know, getting WrestleMania 3, for example. You know, my aunt and uncle, my grandmother came over, my dad's cousins, you know, they were wrestling fans for a long time. You know, so all of us sitting around, you know, Sunday dinner, Italian, you know, the macaroni and everything. My parents only did that for occasions, so that wasn't their normal thing, but that's another story. But, you know, everybody watching that. And then the year after that, you know, WrestleMania 4. I think I went to my uncle's house for WrestleMania 5, you know, whatever. But, you know, there were a lot of family functions built around wrestling. And just, you know, between that, me and my childhood friend John, you know, we'd get on our bikes, we'd go to the video store, and we'd rent, you know, wrestling tapes, and, you know, get pizza, and we'd watch wrestling, you know, all the Saturday night's main events. I mean, you know, it was like the best thing in the world. I'd read the TV guide every week. The first thing I'd go was Saturday night at 11:30, Saturday night's main event on, you know, mm-hmm. So, and Hulk Hogan is, you know, wrapped into a lot of that. So, it was episode 6, by the way. That was the first one I watched. I think you guys reviewed that here on Classics.
Yeah.
So, you know, just really devastating news. But, you know, listen, let's be honest, and we'll get into that. It's mixed news as well, you know, because Terry Bollea, not Hulk Hogan, did a lot to tarnish the legacy of, you know, of Hulk Hogan, you know, as we knew and loved him. So, you know, it's a complicated conversation. I think that's the best way to put it.
I mean, it really is. Cause you look at Hogan, and this is a guy who in some ways is a wrestling tragedy of his own doing, right? Because I feel like we can talk about, you know, what happened over the last several years with Hogan and his legacy and everything. And I think that Hogan had a chance to redeem himself. I think we've seen wrestling fans so many times, like, who know wrestlers did awful things, forgive them, right? And I feel if Hogan, when the news came out that he had made the racist statements, if he had apologized, like, to the locker room in a way that was genuine, I think people would have welcomed him back. The problem was he didn't do that. So, yeah, on one hand, you know, you've got Terry Bollea, the person who, as we've learned more about him over the last several years, has really driven a lot of fans away from him. And on the other hand, you got Hulk Hogan, the performer, who is undoubtedly one of the most important, arguably the most important, professional wrestlers of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's possible we're not even doing this podcast right now with Hulk Hogan. That doesn't mean that the wrestling business wouldn't exist. It obviously would have. We've joked on this show many times about, you know, the WWE narrative of how it was all smoke-filled arenas before them and all that. That's not true. Hogan wasn't the first person that came out to rock music and all that stuff. Other people were doing that. But you can't deny that Hogan was the gateway for so many people of a certain age. He was unquestionably, unquestionably the number one most known professional wrestler of all time until Hogan and or until Austin and The Rock. It was Hogan. Hogan was the name everybody knew. You say pro wrestling, that's the name you threw out. So
I could,
in the 80s and 90s, yes, I mean, so the in the 80s and the 90s, he was the guy who, when people thought about pro wrestling, they thought about him. And, you know, my early, we're talking a lot of nostalgia right now, and we're going to get into the hard hitting things too here in a minute. I just kind of hinted at that. But, you know, it's hard to separate. Like, you're thinking in one hand, your nostalgia for Hogan and childhood, on the other hand, what you've learned about him in recent years. But it is true. Like, your earliest, my earliest memories of a fan, as a fan, this would have been like late 80s, probably mid to late 80s, is the Saturday morning cartoon that featured a cartoon of Hogan, not his voice, but a cartoon of him. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, renting the Hulkamania Coliseum videos with my buddy at the local grocery store. My first wrestling figure I ever owned was the Hogan LJN Thumb Wrestler, which I have up on the shelf back right there. That's not the one I owned. I had to rebuy it because mine disintegrated in the sandbox. But I knew that was the first figure I had. So a couple of years ago, I was at a vintage toy store. I was like, I got to pick that up because I know that and the Piper figure were the first ones I ever had as a kid. So, I mean, he's baked into childhood. And sometimes, you know, that could kind of warp your mind of the person and nostalgia takes over. But we've always been honest on this podcast, and we're going to be honest about this. You know, it's, you can't separate the real life guy from the performer, because we've learned just so many awful things in the last few years. And it makes it honestly really hard to do this show and understanding how we're going to approach this, you know, Frank. So go ahead.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, when I go back and think about, you know, the anticipation for the match between him and Andre the Giant, or him and King Kong Bundy at two, it was more Andre. I mean, I came in around WrestleMania two, but, you know, the first build I sat through was the 1-2-3, which you guys covered. Shout out to you guys for doing a classics on that. You know, everything that happened with four, and then, you know, going against the Macho Man for five, and then the build up to him and the Ultimate Warrior and all of that stuff. I'm not gonna lie to myself and say that I don't look back upon that fondly, because I do. I mean, they're great memories. The people with whom I watched those shows, again, whether it was my uncle, friends I went to school with, you know, my cousins, you know, whatever, that's not going to go away. And it's Terry Bollea, the person. It's Terry Bollea, the person that we learned about, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, ever since the thing came out with, you know, the racial comments and the conversation with his son and in jail and everything like that, the stuff that we learned about. I mean, I'll be honest, I was getting over Hulk Hogan in the late 90s, you know, while all the NWO stuff was great, you know, and we'll get into all that, you know, there was a lot of damage that he did to the industry, you know, and I'm sorry, but he was very complicit in the destruction of WCW, which I'm sure we'll, you know, we'll touch on. Yeah. So, you know, I guess we all have different abilities of compartmentalizing. You know, your ability to compartmentalize is going to be different from mine. It's going to be different from everybody watching the show. And I don't blame anybody for saying, screw you, I hate this guy, I don't care what I watched as a kid, this guy pissed on my childhood. I think Rick Skelton said that, to give Rick a shout. And I can't fault him for that. You know, I can't blame anybody for that thought process. But, you know, we can't deny what he was. And to put a little context to what you were saying before, Ryan, the biggest star of the television pay-per-view era. You know, I mean, like you said, there was wrestling before him. There was Bruno Sammartino. My uncle used to go to the Madison Square Garden every month with his friends, and that place was packed. There was Antonio Inoki, Giant Baba. You know, you go back to Jim Laundis and, you know, all the big names of the past, Gorgeous George, Buddy Rogers. You know, there was wrestling before him, but he was certainly the signature person of the TV pay-per-view era, you know, as the national expansion, you know, was happening. And it's funny, you know, him getting fired from the WWF. I believe he got fired for doing Rocky III, if I know my history correct.
Yes. Yep.
You know, you think about him and Mr. T being a part of that movie, okay? Rocky III is like one of the first movies that I ever loved. Mm-hmm. And I probably haven't told this story, and I'm probably going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but, you know, I saw that growing up. You know, I'd go to my cousin's house, you know, with my parents, and, you know, my dad's cousin was a big wrestling fan. So was my grandfather. He was actually a wrestling fan too. My dad, not so much. He didn't really get passionate about things, but like I had seen wrestling when I was younger, but it didn't register. So, you know, then comes Rocky III. And then a few years later, I'm going to, you know, going to school, and my friend Frank, yes, I have a friend Frank with the same birthday, by the way, I was born first. He starts doing his thing, and he was a little bit of a bully. He would tell you that. He would be talking crap about this guy, Carl Harvey. Now, why am I talking about this? He would walk around saying, let me tell you something, Rowdy Roddy Harvey. What are you going to do when the Frankster runs wild on you? And I'm like, what is this guy talking about? Then you brought up Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling. Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling was my entry into watching professional wrestling, because then I think whatever was on after, I don't think it was Wrestling Challenge yet, but whatever was on it, maybe like All American Wrestling, Superstar, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Those are the real life guys. How cool is that? You know? So we're probably like, or at least the people that watch that cartoon are probably Vince McMahon's ideal customers, because that's what he does. He likes that connectivity, you know, between something in pop culture. So all of a sudden, when I started seeing that, I started seeing Hulk Hogan. I'm like, ah, that's what my friend Frank was talking about. You know, the Hulkster, you know, and Rowdy Roddy Piper, you know, and I'd go rant. I'd watch The War to Settle the Score, all of that stuff. So, you know, there's so much, you know, that's tied to Hulk Hogan and what he meant for the industry. But again, you know, the compartmentalization is going to be different for everybody. And I completely understand anybody's position. Even if they say, you know what? Yeah, he was great for me growing up, but I can't look upon that the same way, knowing what we know about him, knowing what came out in subsequent years.
Yeah. And there's some irony here, because it's 10 years to the day. Greg threw this out in the chat a little bit ago, but it is actually 10 years to the day that news broke about the tape. First, it was the sex tape that got uncovered, where it was, you know, that Hogan had said these awful racist remarks on the sex tape. And it was 10 years ago today that news broke. I will always remember that, because I was running a wrestling website at the time called Top Rope Press that this podcast spiraled out from, actually. And I was actually on a trip. I was on vacation, and that news broke, and I was like on my phone trying to direct all the writers, including our friend Kyle, you know, how to cover this and what to do. And that was 10 years ago today. And then, you know, that was the first news that came out. WWE like separated from them, if I remember right, might've been the same day, or within a couple of days, they had released him from the Legends contract. Yeah. That came out.
They yanked him, they fired him, and then they pulled him out. They removed him from the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they wiped his name off the website and all kinds of, and then it wasn't too much longer, but then recordings came out of some conversations Hulk had with his son while his son was in jail for that horrible auto accident, which basically destroyed the life of Nick's friend, who is still not in a good state to this day. And Hogan had visited him and said some pretty awful things. That was recorded there too. So, you know, all this stuff came out. And then in 2018, Hogan was brought back to WWE at Extreme Rules, pay-per-view show held in Pittsburgh. And they rehired him, and they allowed him a chance to address the locker room. And on that night, apparently the message wasn't so much, you know, I feel bad about what happened, please forgive me. It was more, be careful what you say, because people have cameras and you never know if you're being recorded. And that went over horribly in the WWE locker room. And that is the reason why from that day forward, he has not been beloved by a lot of performers in this industry, because they felt like he wasn't genuine in that apology. It was more about, shoot, I got caught, than actually, you know, begging for forgiveness. Yeah. And especially a lot of African-American wrestlers, you know, we've seen the New Day comments on this. We've seen Shelton Benjamin comments on this. They didn't feel like he really reached out for forgiveness. And so this is where this duplicity with Hulk Hogan lies. And then, you know, we know he's gotten involved in politics and stuff, and he was at the RNC. That's not the root of all this. I've seen people on social media saying, oh, they hate him because he liked Trump. That is not the case. It started way before the Trump stuff. It's about the racism and that being him being caught for that and not being apologetic about it. So I get that. It should be held against him. I do think that, like I said earlier, if he had actually come out for forgiveness, he would have been forgiven and accepted back by fans. And instead, what happened is his last appearance on WWE television was the Raw Netflix debut at the Intuit Dome, where he got booed off the stage promoting his beer. That's Hulk Hogan's last appearance in WWE. And it's just, it's a shame because I think he could have had redemption and he chose the wrong route. And, you know, here we are. So on one hand, we're talking about nostalgia. And on the other hand, we're talking about the real life person and how we can, you know, kind of balance that in our minds. And I know Justin's not here, but he did make a comment in our Facebook group today. And so since he is one of the hosts of the show, I wanted to feature his comment on the air. I'm going to read this. I might have to censor some of it, but I'm going to put this up on the screen. This is what Justin had to say. This was his thoughts on Hogan's passing. So Justin wrote, Hulk Hogan is the reason I became a wrestling fan, one of the most charismatic people ever who transcended the sport. Terry Bollea was a garbage human being who spent the last couple of decades systematically destroying the legacy of Hulk Hogan. One of the greatest careers ever, and yet I can't help but think of the what ifs. What if Terry was a decent and generous human being? What if he was more flexible with his creative? What stars could he have elevated to greater heights? What could have WCW looked like? What if he had supported Jesse Ventura in getting the industry to unionize? That was in 1986. Mm-hmm. Could that have saved lives? Certainly would have helped a lot of people. Unfortunately, so much of his life boiled down to, that doesn't work for me, brother. Thank you, Hulk Hogan, for all the memories and making me fall in love with this wonderfully stupid sport. F you, Terry, for everything else.
I mean, Justin, it says it all. I love the way Justin puts stuff, by the way.
I mean, it pretty much says it all. I mean, those of us who cover wrestling, have been fans for a long time, this is the struggle because we have a lot of nostalgic memories for this man. There is no disputing his importance to the sport.
Yeah.
There's no disputing about what's really remarkable about Hogan is how, you know, he brought all these people to wrestling in the 80s and the early 90s, our childhoods. Mm-hmm. And then he did it again with the NWO in the late 90s. This guy had like two boom periods that he was responsible for. And you can't overlook that.
I was just going to say that. I put that on Michael Jenkinson's comment. I said he brought the same generation in twice because if you think about it, you know, I mean, he pulled a lot of, you know, kids and, you know, whatever in the 80s. And then, you know, a lot of us, I mean, I stayed with it, but a lot of people dropped off. You know, a lot of people got Papa Shango'd out of wrestling for a few years. And then, you know, all of a sudden he brings them back. Like, I know my uncle, like he would watch a couple of pay-per-views with me, but after his thing was Yokozuna winning the Royal Rumble, that did it for him. You know, he'd watch a couple of WrestleManias with me afterwards, but that, you know, that pretty much did it with him watching regularly. When Hogan joined the NWO, that brought him back. And we watched a number of WCW pay-per-views. So he brought even my friend Bill, the same thing. You know, he dropped off around the same time and then he came back when Hogan joined the NWO. So yeah, to be able to pull the same generation in twice is really quite remarkable on the positive side for, you know, for Hulk Hogan.
And that's where the wrestling boom period of the late 90s started. You know, that was 96, NWO forms. WCW was on fire for almost 2 years before WWF caught up and, you know, they changed their product to try to combat what WCW was doing. And ultimately it worked and WWF, you know, soared to heights greater than WCW. And then Hogan ends up coming back to the WWE, you know, and he gets that send off where he's world champion again. He holds the tag team titles with Edge. And, you know, for all the stuff, a lot of politicking with Hogan, obviously. And yes, he is one of the people responsible for the death of WCW and many, many people losing their jobs and wrestlers' contracts, nosediving for a while there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that, at least in WCW, you know, that was contractual. He got the contract to do that where he had creative control. And so, you know, he's a guy who was, you know, it's bad. It was a bad thing to do, but he was smart enough to get that in his contract because he always looked out for himself first. And he was a guy, you know, we saw it when he wrestled Warrior, you know, where the focus was on him and not Warrior. We saw it when he wrestled Rock. You know, he was a shining star at WrestleMania 18. You guys can check our classic show we did last year on that if you're a Patreon subscriber. We had a great conversation on Hogan and Rock. You know, so like he could always put himself first and foremost. And, you know, that was the era he came up in. Always look out for yourself.
Right.
And now it didn't have to be that way. He could have got behind unionizing, and he didn't. If Hulk Hogan had got behind Jesse Ventura in 1986 and demanded the union, it would have happened. And this is a whole different industry today. Instead, I haven't seen if Jesse commented on his death yet, by the way. That would be interesting.
But well, instead, that I gotta say. This we
instead, gotta say. He went behind Jesse's back. And, you know, this came out in court proceedings. We know this is true. He went behind Jesse's back and ratted him out. And that's a whole other story.
This kind of pales in comparison to that, but you could argue he almost killed the WWF in the early 90s because who did he refuse to put over that could have been a bigger star? Now, you know, I know you love Bret Hart. I love Bret Hart, Ryan Huffman, you know, but not to break your guy's heart, but he's not considered one of the biggest stars of the industry. I know we personally like him, but if Hogan put him over like the plan was, at that SummerSlam, then Bret could have been elevated to that next level and he could have been, you know, a signature guy. So, and look at the struggles that WWF had. I mean, they were almost, I mean, I don't know if you believe that, but, you know, things were dire for a while, you know. Yeah. In fact, we talked about it when we did Survivor Series 97. We talked about, you know, how they basically pushed him out. You know, because they couldn't afford his contract. So, you know, had he gave back, you know, what he had been given, you know, who knows what the shape of that company could have been. So, yeah.
Guys, we're going to bring on some guests here. We've got a couple of people who are going to be joining us here to kind of talk about their memories of Hulk Hogan and their thoughts on his passing today. Before I do that, and before I bring on our first guest, if you're watching us live right now, please hit the like button if you haven't already. It really helps us out here on YouTube. You can also find our show on every podcasting platform. Make sure you hit subscribe. And if you really want to support the show, I mentioned Top Rope Nation Classics. The number one way to support the show is by becoming a TRN patron. Frank's a wonderful patron of ours. Get all of our bonus content over there. Top Rope Nation Classics, Jesse's bonus show, TRN Unplugged, my bonus show, TRN Extra, star ratings on pay-per-views from myself, all kinds of stuff, merch giveaways. $5 a month unlocks all of that for you. So you can click that QR code here on the screen if you got a camera phone on you, or you can click the link here in the podcast description and read about how you can support us on Patreon. That is what keeps the show going. All right, we're going to bring on our first guest. He's been on the show numerous times before. Let me get him on right here. It is Carl Longhorn. Carl, welcome to Top Rope Nation. Welcome back to Top Rope Nation. And give us your initial thoughts on the passing of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, very shocked, but not surprised in many ways. Obviously, a lot of rumors been going around for a few weeks about his health, and the sources were dubious. Bubba, obviously being the main one, but clearly there was something to it. I put it on the Facebook group. I'm really mixed about it because as a performer, you look at Hulk Hogan and think, what a superstar. I don't think you'll get a bigger star in wrestling ever again than Hulk Hogan. That's a sad reality in many ways. But as a human being, the lack of redemption that he sought in his life, saddens me from a human level as someone who isn't a religious person, but looks at someone who purported himself as a religious person. What does that mean? Like, that's really, really sad. Like, I look at you two guys as two human beings. I don't judge anything beyond that. And clearly Hulk Hogan did something in his life that made him look at people a different way. And we talked about the video, you guys talked about the video earlier. I think the biggest thing for me was it wasn't just what he said in it, how he reacted to it, not just by apologising, by profiting from it, by going and getting money from that in the most like legalistic way. I was watching a video earlier about Blair Maxwell, and listened to her brother talk about things, and it was all like these legalistic reasons why she's innocent, but she's not innocent, and that's what Hulk Hogan did. I just think to myself, that's not a good human being. That's absolutely a pathetic person. And that's sad for someone that I didn't personally get into wrestling because of Hulk Hogan, but he got me into wrestling because of Hulk Hogan. I got into wrestling seeing Hulk Hogan, but then fell in love with Macho Man and Bret Hart. And the Bulldog, being a Brit, obviously he was useless, but it was the British Bulldog. And he didn't do that. He didn't do any good with that, and it's so sad. It really, I don't know, it's such a horrible moment when you look at it and think, this guy had actually no soul to him in many ways. And that might sound hyperbolic and IWC, but I'm not that person. I actually look at someone's soul and think, yeah, you're not a good person, and I'm sad your legacy's been tarnished in this terrible way.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, like, if you think about it, it's kind of a tragedy. I was just going to say, like we said at the beginning, it's a tragedy of his own making, you know, because, like you said, the redemption arc, I think, would have been there for him if he truly felt, you know, that what he did was wrong, and he asked for forgiveness. We've seen this time and time again from wrestling fans. It's a super forgiving community, but also people who hold a grudge, you know, as we saw at the Intuit Dome. If they feel like somebody, it's really what it comes down to, and this is something that I've talked about recently on the show when we've been talking about why Hangman Page has been connecting in AEW and why Steve Austin did. It's all about authenticity. I feel like wrestling fans, maybe more than any other professional sports league, are all about when somebody is authentic. And if they don't think you're authentic, they will hold it against you forever, you know?
Yeah.
And instead of going down the redemption path, he chose, like you said, Carl, he chose the grift, really, is what it came down to. And he basically doubled down on that angle. And we've saw that over the last year. And yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because if you grew up watching him, again, you're like, you got those good memories of him, which we can talk about here in a little bit. But man, it's hard for it to mean as much to you when you uncover who someone really is. You know, like they always, this quote about never meet your heroes because they're always going to disappoint you. Yeah, that would ring true here for a lot of people of our age, I would say.
Yeah, and Frank talked about Ozzy earlier, and what a contrast. A guy that was a superstar that stole the scene whenever he came into it, had no ego. He grew up in Birmingham, not far from where I live now, didn't grow up here, but I'm close to Birmingham now. And the contrast to Hogan is massive. Like, Hogan stole the scene, but the ego got the better of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sad. And there was, Ozzy was 72, I believe, and Hogan was 71, so it was like a year between the two. Yeah. But it's ultimately so sad.
Yeah. Go ahead, Frank. You were going to jump in a second ago.
You know, and to kind of to pick up on what both of you guys are talking about with the redemption, you know, as they say, the proof is in the pudding. And that Intuit Dome reaction, I think, is more important than we realize, because what are some of the things that wrestling fans love? Legends and returns. Okay. Yeah. Those are some of the things that get the biggest pops. And you would think one of the biggest stars of all time, one of the biggest, maybe the biggest star of the, as I said before, the television and pay-per-view era, you know, the person that a lot of people are going to say put wrestling on the map. If he was that person, then that crowd should have embraced him and cheered him. For that crowd to boo, and I don't want to hear it's Los Angeles, you know, it's mostly a Democratic state, they're booing the Hollywood character. Give me a break. That explanation just really, that was out there. You remember that explanation, right? Oh, they're booing the Hollywood Hogan.
Yeah, that's,
come on.
No, that's bullshit.
Give me a break.
He got booed at WrestleMania 37. That was in Florida, in Tampa,
With Titus, that bothered me. That bothered me, not for nothing. That bothered me with Titus. I kind of lost a little respect for I mean, unless Titus was forced to do that, to stand side by side with Hogan and do whatever the crap they were doing at the beginning of the show, I'm like, come on, you're Titus O'Neil. What are you doing? You know, but that's a whole different conversation for another day. No, it's just, you know, he came across many times as phony. I mean, I remember reactions, Ryan and Carl, not for nothing, you know, even after he got brought back, I never remembered reactions being that great for him, to be quite honest with you. You know, like, I know they brought him back when Gene died, you know, and, you know, things like that. But I don't remember the crowd being excited to see him. They were excited to see Brett. I'll tell you that right now. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to make an example.
You know, and I see Ross here in our chat, and I'll address this a little bit because I agree with some of this, you know. So Ross says, what's sad is people all over social media putting a negative spin on his death. I don't get why people can't just show some compassion and some heart and remember his loved ones that are suffering. I don't really agree with the, you know, people just making fun of his death. You know, I wouldn't do that either. So I agree with Ross, you know, on that. I understand people have strong feelings on Hogan in both directions. This is such a weird deal because, you know, you log in and you see people either like celebrating it or up in arms with grief about it. And, you know, I personally don't think that, you know, you should go after somebody super hard after they die. We try to be objective on this show as best we can. We're talking about the positives and the negatives. You know, we got into the positives of Hogan earlier in the show. Now we're talking about why there's controversy. And it is true. It is a complex legacy for Hulk Hogan. You know, if it wasn't, you wouldn't see that on social media. That's the proof in the pudding that it is a complex legacy, whether we like it or not. So, I mean, this is something that we've seen with a lot of people, a lot of stars of a certain age who came up in a world, you know, that was different than the world that we are now. But, you know, the truth is racism was always bad in this country. And certainly in the 21st century, if you couldn't acknowledge how bad racism was, people are going to hold that against you. So, you know, that's where we're at with Hulk Hogan. But, I guess looking back at his career and, you know, his biggest moments. I mean, obviously, as we've said, the 80s wrestling exploding, that WWF golden period, not just WWF. I mean, he was a huge draw in AWA. Frank, you mentioned, you know, he had worked Vince Sr.'s WWWF, did Rocky III. Vince Sr. wasn't happy about that, left, goes back to Minnesota, was a massive draw. I mean, AWA was running all over doing, they, 15,000-16,000 people when Hogan was on the card. You know, when he wasn't there, they weren't doing that kind of attendance, which shows his drawing power. And, you know, Vince Jr. knew that this is the guy I can build this company around. And he was right, you know, and he hires him back January 1984, beats, it was like 6 days after I was born, actually, January 23rd, 84, something like that. He beat the Sheik in Madison Square Garden just down the road from you, Frank. And I mean, so starts this boom period in pro wrestling, and he held the title for the better part of the next 4 years. And, you know, they tried Randy. Randy held the title. They had one of the all-time greatest storyline feuds in history when the Mega Powers exploded. Mm-hmm. You know, they try to go to Warrior. Like I said, he loses to Warrior, but when he leaves the Sky Dome, he made the story about himself. And he's talked about that in recent years in interviews. Like, you know, I always knew how to put myself over, and that's what he did. I heard John Pollock talking about this on Post Wrestling because he had interviewed him and asked him about it. And he said, like, yeah, you know, I left the Sky Dome because I wanted to make it about myself. That's pro wrestling. And he was really good at that, you know. And then he steps away for a little bit, comes back, wins the title again at Mania 7, Mania 8, and so on. And, you know, as we talked about, reignites the industry again in 1996 with the NWO, with Hall and Nash and everything they did in WCW. So you cannot diminish the man's impact on pro wrestling. He is on the Mount Rushmore. There's no question about it. Anyone that would disagree with that, you could not take seriously as a wrestling historian or media personality. If you don't put Hogan on the Mount Rushmore, no matter what you think about him, you have no credibility, right? Right.
I mean, even people in their 20s, you know, I mean, you would think that people, because I get a lot of people at work, believe it or not, I've been at my job for 18 years and I still meet people. Like, you'd think I would know everybody. I mean, I know a good amount of people, but I'm always meeting people. And sometimes I meet people that have been at the company for like 20 years and it's like we've never crossed paths. The point being, Even young people that I talk to, that I tell, you know, that I watch wrestling and I'm involved with a couple of outlets, they're like, oh yeah, I used to watch when it was Hulk Hogan, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's such a, it's a name that is such a household name, connected to the industry. So yeah.
Carl, any thoughts on Hogan's impact on the industry in general that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think it's unprecedented. I think if you look at what he did, and the Warrior thing is an interesting point that he brought up. I put a lot of the blame on that on WF and Vince bail on Warrior fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Liam and Kyle talked about this on the, I forget the podcast name now. They thought about that, how literally straight away they went away from Warrior as a top guy. And I think there maybe was some good intention poking there, but from that point onwards, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. But as a draw, I mean, to draw in two different eras, sure, in the 80s and 90s, and arguably, you would argue, in the early 2000s, you know, his comeback in 2002, okay, it was a down period, but the reaction that he got in the Sky Dome against Rock was insane, absolutely insane. Like, I remember watching that live in the UK at 3 a.m. and thinking, what's going on here? Like, this is the bad guy, and he's been cheered against the Rock, who's the king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that magnetism is off the scale. Sadly, he tarnished it by going on too long, I think. As many guys do, Ric Flair, when Ric Flair started to pass away, I feel like I'll be having a similar conversation about Ric Flair in many ways, sadly, for different reasons, because these guys couldn't quit fame. And they had to keep going on. And that's where the diminishing legacy comes in, that had Hogan retired when he's beaten the George Dome, my God, what a career. But yeah. he couldn't quit, and he had to go on and stank up WCW, played the part in killing WCW, and then played the part in setting the precedent in WWE of the legends have to rule that we saw on Tuesday night with The Taker and Trick Williams. That legacy was born in 2002, the year that WWE went backwards for the first time and have never looked back, or never looked forward, because they've always looked back. And that's a problem.
Yeah, that brief little run he had in 02, I'm not going to lie. You know, I was 18. It was my senior year of high school when that Backlash show happened.
I was 18 as well, yeah.
Hunter. And I was kind of into it at the time. It was just this weird nostalgia trip for a little while. And after that, he should have hung it up for sure. Yeah. You know, then it went on. He did the tag team with Edge, you know, whatever. That was fine. Mr. America, TNA stuff.
The line of technical stuff was funny. I did enjoy that.
Yeah. But, you know, he had that little nostalgia trip where he held the title for, God, what was it? Like, he had it for 2 months or something like that. Maybe it wasn't even that long.
2 months to take it,
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, God, when was Hogan born? He was born in 53, I believe. So he was like 49, 48 or 49 when he had the title. I remember thinking he was a lot older than that at the time. And now I'm thinking like, oh, geez, he's only like a few years older than me right now. It's wild. Yeah. But, I mean, it worked for a little bit. It worked in short spurts. You know, I would say, but yeah,
I would argue he hurt Triple H a little bit. Not that I want to create sympathy for Triple H. Okay, I'm the last person that wants to do that, and I wish I could do a Kyle voice right now, but I could say you guessed it. but you know, you guessed it, winning the title and then having to lose it to Hogan a month later. I think that really hurt, and I think that was a big blow to that time period. You know, whereas Hulk could have just put him over, you know, and made a new star, you know. And I know Triple H was working hard. That's a whole nother conversation. But, yeah, I think that was damaging, too. And not to encroach on your job, but, you know, Ryan, but the John Hope mentioning in the chat that he also destroyed TNA. I mean, I had a little bit of interest in TNA. I wasn't following it regularly. You know, but I did see, you know, a little bit of it when he went over there. And, you know, you could just see the same, you know, methodology that he was using, you know, trying to put him over, trying to make himself the biggest star. And, you know, after, I mean, they're still around. So it's hard to say, that he destroyed it because the company is still around. I mean, they got nine lives, those people. But, you know, if there was any interest in the company, it probably diminished a lot, you know, after Hogan spent some time there.
Yeah. Yeah. John saying, if you want to know how popular he is, I've had people from work tell me that he died. I've had the same thing. I've had people reaching out to me that I don't talk to very often that are just texting me. Did you hear Hulk Hogan die? Like, yeah, you know, I heard.
Like, I'm in a text chat with coworkers, coworkers of mine. Now, some of them watched wrestling in like the 80s and the 90s or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing ever came up when, like, I'm trying to think of wrestlers who died within the last 10 years. Nothing's coming to mind. I mean, after Benoit, but Hulk Hogan came up. You know, Hulk Hogan came up in the chat. So this is with coworkers, people that haven't watched wrestling in 30 years.
Yeah. So, Frank, let me just ask you this. How many times do you see Hogan wrestle live?
You know, so I'm not the biggest. I haven't gone to a lot of events in my life. So, you know, you would think, you know, me being in the Northeast, I would go a lot. But, you know, I mean, I went once to Nassau Coliseum. I think it was him wrestling Orndorff after they did the turn on TV, which, by the way, that's the turn that solidified me as a wrestling fan. I was plugged in after that. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I saw him after that because, I went, it was my uncle, my father, and my friend Patrick. We went to the Undertaker versus, Ultimate Warrior in a casket match. So Hogan would have been champ at that point because that was 91. I don't remember. Was he still working Slaughter around that time? Maybe. So if that's the case, that would have been twice. But I don't think I saw him. Did I go to a WCW event? There was a WCW. There was a Nitro in Nassau Coliseum in 98. But the main event for that was what's his name? DDP and Macho Man. They revisited the feud.
Okay.
So yeah, it was oddly, sadly, only once or twice that I saw him live. The majority of my viewing of Hulk Hogan was on TV.
Carl, you ever see him live?
No, sadly not. I think Frank, the 91 tour, I think there was a 1A, 1B tour, so that probably you wouldn't have seen Slaughter and Hogan that year.
Yeah.
Potentially. No, I never saw Hogan live. The only early WWF guy I saw was the Bulldog on a random British indie show in between when he got released from WWF and went to WCW, something Leeds.
Okay.
Something for Dynamite Kid of all people.
Wow. Wow. I never saw him wrestle in person, but I did see him once. I saw him at the 2006 Hall of Fame in Chicago for WrestleMania 22 weekend. He was at that Hall of Fame ceremony, but yeah, every other time it just never lined up. I went to a Nitro in 99 and he was working that year, but he wasn't on that show. And then I went to a Raw in 02, but it was shortly after he had dropped the title. He wasn't there, so I didn't see him there either, but saw him once at the Hall of Fame. This was back when they were doing it in theaters too. So it was a smaller environment. So, that was kind of cool. I can't even remember why he was there. I got to look this up. Who he was inducting, because I know he did a speech for somebody. That was the Hall of Fame that Brett got inducted. But he was there in 2006. I cannot remember who it was at this point in time. But yeah, he was there. I'd have to look up the
I mean, you know, he always wiggled his way there for, you know, for something. I mean, you know.
He was inducting Mean Gene. That's right.
Okay.
Makes sense.
So he came out on stage to Real American. And I've said this on the show before. I think Real American's the greatest theme song of all time in pro wrestling. Rick Derringer, who just died 2 months ago, too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Would you guys concur? You think it's up there?
It's on that. It's hard to argue that. Yeah,
it's very hard to argue that. Or Austin from the glass break is
yeah.
But the heart Mark and me want to say Bret Hart, but yeah, you can't argue it.
Right. Adam chiming in here in the chat says, traveling from San Diego as a young kid with my dad to see him wrestle the Sheik sitting ringside. And that night was a buzz. Guessing that was MSG in 84 when he won, the whole building exploded. Super loud memory he'll never forget with his late father. That's cool. It's a cool memory to share.
That's awesome. Mm.
Yeah. In the building that night, January 84, Adam Paul. Wow. Yeah. Do you guys have anything else you want to share, or should we wrap it up here? I think, I've pretty much hit what I wanted to. We have one other guest that was thinking about coming on, but we're almost done with the show, so we might hold off. He's not here yet. So.
Yeah. Well, I want to say on the TNA stuff, and not to shit on people talking about TNA, but Dixie killed TNA. She destroyed TNA. She gave Hulk the power, similar to Bischoff and Ted Turner in WCW. They gave Hulk that power. Now, did he execute it well? No, he didn't. But I think if you're Dixie Turner in 2010, you've seen what happened to WCW in the late 90s, you probably don't give Bischoff and Hogan that leverage because they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And actually, look at what the guys they brought in. There were some Hogan guys, were also some non-Hogan guys. They all failed because it was TNA,
yeah.
And they did the wrong strategy. But no, I think in terms of Hogan generally, I think I hope that his family have peace, and I would like to think Brooke obviously was estranged from him.
Mm-hmm.
Was able to connect to him at some point, because from a human point of view, like, I don't like the idea of a daughter losing her father and not having some sort of connection from the end. And there was a great disconnection. I don't really care about Linda Hogan because Linda Belair or whatever her name is, because she was a parasite, frankly. But I hope that, you know, his offspring were able to connect. Nick and Nick and Brooke were able to connect, because that's the most important thing for me.
As you know, something could have changed in the last few weeks as his health was deteriorating. We don't know for sure, but most of the reporting was, as you said, Carl, that Brooke had been estranged from him for a while. Like, she has two children he had never met. So
I didn't even know that.
I hope that's not how things ended, you know, just from a human perspective. But
him and Nick were close, obviously, to answer Adam's point. They were still close. Nick ran the bar, pretty much, I believe, for Hulk or for Terry.
Yeah.
So they were still close, but obviously Brooke was, you know, separate.
Mm-hmm. We got one more guest making the run-in at the end here. I'm going to bring him on, and he could share his thoughts on Hogan's passing, and then we're going to wrap up today, I think. So here is, I don't think he's ever been on Top Rope Nation before, but if you're a patron, you've heard him before on TRN Extra, because we do a lot of stuff over at Bleacher Report together. So I'm going to welcome into TRN Jeremy Loss. Jeremy,
it's wonderful to be here.
Yeah.
What's up, guys? Sorry, I'm running a little bit Jeremy. Late. I had a tattoo appointment today, and it ran a little long. But glad to be here. Kind of a weird day.
Yeah.
Cause I'm haven't had a chance to listen to the whole show, but I'm sure you all have really kind of hit the nail on the head on this one, where it's complicated to feel like how you feel about Hulk Hogan from a wrestling standpoint and from a history standpoint. You can't deny the fact that the man has a tremendous legacy, is leaving behind a tremendous legacy on the business. And then on the personal side, there's a lot of negative things that have kind of transpired in his life, and he's kind of put forth. So it's weird. I don't know how to feel about it. Like, you know, like I don't want to kick somebody like that just passed. I don't want to like speak ill of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that you cannot turn a blind eye to when it comes to Hulk Hogan. It is just one of those things where I'll be very interested to see the reactions of the talent during the 10 bell salute tomorrow night on SmackDown.
Yes.
I think the camera will do
that in a minute.
Yeah, because I feel like the talent is gonna, like, there's gonna be some talent that they're probably gonna want to like shy away from. So it is just it's just overly complicated in terms of how I want to feel about this. I have some great memories with Hulk Hogan. Like, I mean, I grew up in the Attitude Era, so a lot of my Hogan memories were WCW memories, and a lot of Hollywood Hogan. So it's just like, I remember him coming back or being the third man, kind of going through his heel turn and kind of feeling that in real time and going with it in real time. I was too young to be like a Hulkamaniac beforehand. So like, for me, I knew Hulk as a babyface, but he was the majority of the time. And like, my biggest memories of Hulk Hogan were Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
So did you get into the O2 run then, particularly because you had never really been part of the Hulkamania scene, you know, when he came back and he's come out in red and yellow again and won the title back? You know, how did you react to that?
It wasn't for me. I think, Ryan, we've talked about this numerous times. I love a good heel. Like, I am a sucker for a heel. Yeah. And Hollywood Hulk Hogan, I mean, say what you want about it. Like, it was gold. Like, they made a shit ton of money with that. And for me, Hulkamania just never really clicked. I do, like, even though I wasn't a huge wrestling fan and I was really young, I do like the jokes about like eat your vitamins or what have you with Hulkamania. Like, that's just never resonated with me. And so give me the good old like black and white vignette, the this ad is brought to you by the NWO. Like, that was the stuff that like really hit with me.
He knew how to make a cool character. I mean, like, the whole Hollywood Hogan look was super cool. Coming out to Voodoo Child, bringing out Dennis Rodman. I mean, like, as a Bulls fan in that era, that was incredible, you know, to see on pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. He had a really good ability to reinvent himself, you know, to do that. The way he grew out the beard, that Hollywood Rules shirt he used to wear in that era was such a cool wrestling shirt too, by the way. I think they've remade that a number of times since.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, you can't take that away from him. It was a cool character. It was a great heel gimmick. It all worked, obviously, made a lot of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, we struggle with this too, because how do you, also can't turn a blind eye to the real Terry Bollea. And it's really, as we've been saying throughout the podcast, Jeremy, it's, we get a little nostalgic and then, you know, that creeps back into your mind. You're like, but the real guy, you know, mm-hmm. the last 10 to 15 years and what we've discovered about him and not repenting for some of that behavior is, it's just made it such a complex legacy.
Yeah. And like, I think I saw on Twitter shortly after the news broke that like his last appearance on WWE television is him getting booed out of the building.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, that's crazy to think about. For a guy with like such a rich history, like his lasting memory is being booed out of LA. Like, that's just, it blows my mind.
Yeah. I'm going to be really interested to see how they handle this tomorrow night on SmackDown. Like, bell salute, you know, I think they're going to do a lot. I don't think it's just going to be one tribute video. I think it's going to be the kind of thing where they're showing highlights throughout the entire show.
I think it's a tribute show. I think it's going to end up being a tribute show where they, and then it's going to bleed over to Monday too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That will be really interesting to see. And you guys have any thoughts you wanted to chime in there?
I'm curious with the tribute show, because I was talking to my friends about this in the text on the way down. You know, this is TKO's WWE. This isn't the McMahon's WWE anymore. So based on that reaction that he got in LA, are they going to be a little careful in how much they pay tribute to him? You know, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that amounts to. I don't even know what I'm thinking.
I mean,
are they just gonna do, because listen, this is arguably the biggest star in the company's history. Yeah. And if the legacy wasn't as complicated as we've talked about, you know, it would be a no-brainer. You could make it a total tribute. Like, they, I mean, look what they did with Owen, you know, and Owen wasn't even the biggest star when he died. So, you know, what, like you said, I think, Jeremy, you brought it up. Are they going to avoid certain people talking about him? You know, are they going to kind of do enough but not do too much? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the tarnished legacy. And by the way, I just want to drop something quick. When you had to make a CD back in the day, not playlist on your phone. I mean, I was going to the gym in the 90s, okay?
Yeah.
Not that it shows now, but I would have to make CDs with my, you know, workout songs. Voodoo Child was the first song.
Oh, let me tell you. Yeah. I think I've told this story before, but when I first got the internet, which I felt like I was the last person in the world to get the internet, it was 1998. We finally got a computer at home with the internet. And when I discovered how to download theme music on there, and back then, dial-up connection, it took like an hour or more to download one song.
Dude.
I rigged up a tape player, and I would set it next to the computer. We had like standalone speakers for the computer, and I would record the theme music onto a cassette tape. That's how I would get it permanently. And yeah. And Real America was one of the first ones I did.
There you go.
Yeah.
I see Adam in the chat. I did see the McMahon statement. Yeah. I saw Linda McMahon put out just the worst Photoshop graphic. It looks like somebody that's like a middle school graphic designer put out. And she's a department.
Oh my God, that is terrible. Okay, hold on. I have got to put this up on the screen. This is real bad.
It's so bad.
I think she made this on Microsoft Paint. Hold on a second.
Yeah, and then I saw Trips.
How were you talking about there?
Yes.
That is not good. Not a great graphic for
what?
Yeah.
To be sharing there. Yeah, Triple H had a big statement. I saw that with a bunch of pictures. I saw Vince's. Yeah, there you are. I to your point, you guys, about TKO, I don't think that they're going to shy away at all. I mean, let's be honest. This is the company that's in bed with Dana White and Trump. And I think they'll be
Saudi regime.
Yeah, they might even go.
Although that's all with that Saudi regime all across sport now, pretty much. But
yeah. I could see them going a step further and putting like Real American beer like on the center of the ring, like just trying to like hawk some more of his stuff. I don't know. Did you guys touch on the like where does this leave his new wrestling promotion with Eric Bischoff?
Yeah, we haven't talked about that. They weren't doing real well, were they?
Oh, no,
the ticket sales.
I mean, the worst person to get, I mean, like,
who gives us
amateur wrestling with the most pro wrestling guy ever and with the big huckster ever, the Bishop. No, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I think, what, they sold like 300, 400 tickets or something ridiculous?
I'm looking at their Twitter page right now. Look, I barely use Twitter anymore because that site is not super functional for engagement at these days, but our Top Rope Nation Twitter has like five times as many followers as the Real American Freestyle company. So that's not a great start for them, especially with Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff pushing it. So yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, you mentioned the beer company. I mean, they've got that logo on the ring apron already. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah. A lot of question marks right now, but We'll see on SmackDown how they handle all of this tomorrow night. And be interesting what AEW does. I don't know if they had put out a statement yet.
They've not so far. And I don't think they will do. I think Tony's going to stick to his idea of Ban Hogan. Right or wrong?
2020, didn't he?
Right. He banned Linda in 2020.
Yeah.
I think he banned Hogan before then.
Yeah.
Or he banned Hogan from Stardom. Right or wrong, look, there's issues with that in my opinion, but there's also merits to it at the same time. It's on an offensive fall down.
Mm-hmm.
And stick to something. If you ban someone, don't credit them personally. That's my view.
I wouldn't be surprised if they put out, or they have a brief statement or something. I feel like he's too big of a star to not acknowledge at all. But
would Shivani say something?
Not to acknowledge it.
Shivani Jordan said something. He said, close colleague, yes. Close friend, no.
Yeah,
in reply to someone.
Too. Yeah.
Sting's put something out. MJF's put something out as a heel tweet. Would you expect? Mm-hmm. Saying you're expecting a Hogan tweet, not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's probably let Tal do what I want to do, and as a company, you do what you want to do, right or wrong.
Man, yeah. I'm scrolling Twitter right now, and some of the memes that have come out about this are dark.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying earlier. You're seeing it from all angles.
Yeah. It is. Like, I've seen numerous Hogan Benoit, like, fake
AI that's stuff. Stupid. Exactly.
I mean, you know, who needs that? Who needs that shit? You know, it's ridiculous. It's not necessary.
The internet is a dark place. I mean, that's what I was saying when I came on. Like, I understand the man has a complicated legacy, but he just passed away. Like, there's just, it's so odd to be that dark and immediately following someone's death like this.
Yeah. So Tony had also said this. I had to scroll a while because Tony is very active on Twitter. But
he is, but he says he doesn't like social media and he can't handle it.
He blocked me.
He blocked you.
Frankie got blocked by Tony.
I never interacted with the guy. I have no idea. I mean, I do a podcast once a month and the guy blocks me.
Oh my God.
I mean, you know.
Well, if you're on the podcast feed, Tony wrote, "Say what you want about Hulk Hogan, but his impact on pro wrestling is undeniable. RIP Hulkster, the end of an era." So there you go.
I think to the point we've made about social media, I think it is very telling how the reaction to Hogan's death about just the toxicity in not just wrestling fans, but it's a wrestling podcast. We'll talk about that because it's so tribalistic now. It's ridiculous. And Sean Rossup made a point earlier in the week about how AEW did a really big crowd, you know, close to 30,000 for All In.
Mm-hmm.
TNA did their record North American crowd last weekend. WWE have got close to, over two nights, 80,000 sold already for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And each attendance being criticized as bad. That just shows how bonkers things are. Like, how can you not celebrate all those things and say, okay, I may not like TNA, I may not like AEW, I may like WWE, but just enjoy it. Mm. Enjoy what you enjoy and ignore the rest of it. Don't comment on it, just leave it alone. Like, if you don't like AEW, you don't like WWE, you don't like TNA, just don't comment on it. Enjoy what you enjoy. But there's a real, and Elon's a big part of it, there's this engagement farming of,
yeah,
talking crap. You've got the Heluses and the air goals of the world that just engagement farm for nonsense. Yeah. Whereas good content creators like yourselves just get left in the dirt because you're actually talking rationally.
Yeah. Adam was asking in the chat about this photo with police. I don't know about the photo. There was a TikTok that there was a video of Hogan being taken out of his house where they were doing chest compressions. That was legitimate. I think TMZ had that in their article I saw earlier. Yeah. So I don't know about that, but not something I really seek out to see.
He? So it's a official verdict.
But if you're sorry,
he died in the hospital is the official story. So
yeah,
I don't like that sort of journalism, like that tabloid journal.
Ambulance chasing.
Ambulance chasing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you, Carl.
We had it with Princess Diana in the UK, however legitimate that story is about her being chased, but there were people taking photos of her dead in a car. That's just not right.
Yeah. Never ends. Yeah. All right, guys, I think we've pretty much said it all in the last hour and 10 minutes. As I said, this was kind of a last minute podcast. Obviously didn't know we were going to be doing this. I did know we were going to be doing a Top Rope Nation Classic soon on Great American Bash 86, which won our poll. We'll be doing that here probably next week. Obviously, we'll have SummerSlam coverage as well. So make sure you subscribe here on YouTube or wherever you are getting your podcasts. Frank, you have anything you would like to promote before we head off the air here?
No, just I got to be ramping up pro wrestling then and now real soon here. You know, it's been a minute, just been a crazy month for me. The last show I did, I've been doing 95 WWF, so a 30-year look back. The last show I covered was King of the Ring. And it's been interesting going over that year. I know it's not a lot of people's favorite year, and you know, I can't sit here and really defend it, but it's not as bad as I remembered it. You know, there's some good stuff, there's some bad stuff. I think it's one of those time periods where, you know, they're trying new things, but they're still kind of stuck in their old ways. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, some of that bear itself out. But yeah, I'll be doing that over for the Pro Wrestling Torch. Ryan, you've been a guest on my show a number of times. I got to get you back on. And as far as my social media, I don't post a lot. I just basically stick to the TRN group and a couple little things on Facebook. But you can find me there. Frank Pettiani, Pettiani. Same thing with X, Instagram, and Blue Sky. Just throw a 73 at the end of my name for Blue Sky because I just had to be different.
There you go. And hey, Jeremy, I think hopefully we'll be collabing again soon over on Bleacher Report. I'm waiting for our direction, but I know it's coming here in August. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky. BR is where I talk most about wrestling. X is where I complain about Arsenal Football Club and the Padres. So if you're into that, you can always follow me there. But yeah, you could always catch me on Bleacher Report with Ryan as we preview wrestling shows and cover AEW, WWE. It's always a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. Carl, where can people follow you?
Yeah, people can follow me at Carlo1984A on X. Yet to be on Blue Sky, but I'll be on there in the next few days. And yeah, on the Facebook group for TRN, and I'll be back on here soon.
Yes. Yeah, Carl's one of our most active members. If you guys are not in the Facebook group, search Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion. All the hosts are in there. We just have tons of posts going up every single day. Lots of good discussion on wrestling. Great group of people. If people aren't good dudes, we boot them out of the group, and ladies for that matter. So
rightly so, because we don't want people who decide that they yes. are not drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Yeah. So we yes. keep a pretty tight-knit good group of people there. You will be welcomed if you join the group. So get on in there. You can follow Top Rope Nation on Blue Sky X Instagram. We're also on TikTok, pretty much everywhere. As I said, all the podcasting platforms as well. You can find me at Ryan Droste. That is Droste. Appreciate you guys joining me today. You know, difficult show to do, but I think we did it justice. So appreciate your help.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers. Great being here, Ryan. Thank you.
Absolutely. We will talk to you all again real soon. Take care.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.